Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's February 17th, 2012. You're listening to the best poker cast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Long.
Hey, I was watching a TV show this week. It was some sitcom.
Oh, seriously, stop right now.
And I was, you know, that's all I ever do is I watch television. I don't even work anymore. I got some lackey putting the magazine together for me behind your back. You don't even know it. And
that's why it's gotten so much better lately.
There's this funny line on the show, one of the shows. I'm not going to say which one it was, but this guy's like at a friend's house or something, and he's like, hey, I'm going to use your computer for a minute. And he's like, sure. So he goes on to, like, Google, and he said, how come every time I type in the letter H, the autofill comes up hot women with bikinis on or something? You know, automatically filled in what it thought the guy was going to want to type in. And, of course, it was a funny, sexy joke or something. But he got me to thinking, you know, when I do answer a lot of my emails at night on my iPad, and I do a lot of my work on the iPad at, like, you know, 11 to... A lot of people are always shocked. I get an email the next day. Oh, my God, how late were you up? I'm on the West Coast, and I was in bed, you know. So I do a lot of my emails and stuff at, like, 2 in the morning. And so I'm sitting there, and I saw that episode on TV, and I thought, I wonder what happens when you type in poker into Google, at least on my computer, and then type in the next letter. It automatically fills in something for you. So I went through the whole alphabet to see what would come up after you type in the word poker and then the next letter. Now, I'm painfully aware of the last time I did a little quiz with you that it went on for too long. Remember when I was like, which one of these shows is not a real show? And we got like 175 emails saying, hey, it was funny after like three, but after that. So I'm just going to ask you a couple of letters to see what you think. And then I'll rattle off the list myself. But let's just say if I typed in poker space and then the letter F, what comes up, Scott?
Poker space. Oh boy, I had a bunch of them all lined up. I didn't have anything for F there.
See, that's why I did it. I want to keep you on your toes.
Wow. Poker F. Poker future.
No. See, I need that little bell noise. No, poker face lyrics.
Oh, my gosh.
So this is kind of falling into the whole...
You remember realize that you're broadcasting this to thousands of people around the world. And you want them to know that, not that I have anything wrong with Lady Gaga. I love her stuff, too. But I don't think it's really manly.
But it's not my thing. Like, I've never typed in poker face lyrics in my life.
Yeah, just like all those websites that my wife finds on my computer aren't mine.
I've never typed in poker face lyrics. It's
I don't know how that got
the
there.
Most popular search on Google for poker space F is poker face lyrics. So I thought that was very interesting, and it goes back to that whole most famous poker players thing. Where who was doing the search for, and then they were like, well, it was Ivy and all this other stuff. But this sort of tells a little bit of a story here. Like, I've never typed in poker edge in my life, but E was poker edge. I don't even know what poker edge is, but that's what came up. When I typed in poker space E, the first suggestion was poker edge. What the hell does that even mean?
I don't know. Is that software or something?
I don't know. A poker edge, I guess. It used to be a poker edge, I guess, but it was two words.
Within 20 minutes of posting the show, we'll know.
All right, how about poker Y?
Wow.
Yeah. See what I mean? You can't think of anything, right?
Poker Yang. I know that's not it.
No.
There's a Y I can think of.
Poker Yahoo.
Oh my gosh.
Exactly.
No way I would have gotten that.
So, I mean, there's no way you're going to get these things, but I just thought it was cool. So, here they are in alphabetical order, real quick. Poker After Dark, These are all the first things that came up when you typed it. Poker books.
Of course.
Poker chips.
Sure.
And I guess when After Dark came up, I was kind of upset. I was hoping to say like Annie Up or something, but it didn't. So poker dealer school.
Okay. Yeah.
Poker edge. Poker face lyrics. Poker games.
Uh-huh.
Poker hands.
Yep.
Poker in Tampa. So that sounds like it was local.
Google's all local search.
Yeah, that sounds like a local search there. Poker J. You got it. What do you think Poker J was?
Poker Jacks.
Poker Jokes.
Jokes?
Poker Jokes was the most popular Poker J search.
There might be two good poker jokes in the entire lexicon of poker jokes.
I think.
I guarantee you they're not the two that any of our listeners are thinking of.
I think Doc Frank told us both of them, too.
Yeah.
All right, so Poker King, Poker Lingo, Poker Movies, Poker News, makes sense. Poker Online, makes sense. Poker Players Alliance.
Yeah, okay.
Poker Quotes, which is kind of funny. I don't know anybody who actually keeps track of
those. Never go broke with a queen in your hand.
Yeah, exactly. Poker Rules. Poker Stars.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Poker, I miss you so much.
Poker Tables. Poker USA. Poker Variations. Poker Winning Hands. What do you think Poker X was?
Poker X Factor.
Yeah, Scott gets one.
Really? I got one.
1 out of 26. And then, of course, I said Poker Yahoo. And the big one, Poker Zynga.
Yeah, okay.
So I just thought it was pretty interesting that, because you can sort of tell what people are thinking and looking for. You know, I mean, in other words, it's sort of like that whole, the lexicon of poker or the zeitgeist or whatever, you know. But I would never have thought poker face lyrics would be the first F suggestion.
Well,
I thought that was weird.
I mean, I guess it's outside the box, but yeah. If you think about it as an overall surge, absolutely.
Yeah, but interesting stuff. I just thought, and I really thought Annie Up would come up somewhere.
And I think the most interesting part, too, is the degradation of our educational system in this country. I mean, who types Poker Zynga?
I know.
Isn't it Zynga Poker?
I know.
Yahoo Poker?
Well, you know what it is? It's probably poker. You don't have to type the word and. They constantly remind you of that when you type it in.
No, I don't mean the and. So, I mean, it's just the order of it.
No, but I'm saying a lot of people will type in poker and Zynga.
Cosenza Chris and Long Scott.
Well, that's the thing, though. Is poker and Zynga is what they want to make sure all stories of poker and Zynga are in it, not poker, Zynga, poker. You know what I mean? So that's probably why it's like that. But it's just bizarre to me that some of them are really weird. You know, Poker Yahoo. I still get it.
Well, no, I mean, the Yahoo game used to be probably the most popular before Zynga came on the...
I remember it was a limit, though. I remember when it first started, they didn't have no limit on there. It was just a limit poker.
Yeah, that I don't remember. But
that was brutal.
Never, like, never enjoying playing it. So there was original games where, you know, you ran out of chips, you just pushed a button, you got more.
Yep, that's right. You just said, I want more chips.
Great way to learn how to play poker. All right, well, speaking of bingo poker, we have an interesting debate brewing on the NAMagazine.com forum, as we always do. And this one, ironically, does not involve Gundam Rant and I. Though I think I posted it. I don't know whether it went there.
Yeah, I don't think it's ironic either, but whatever.
Shut up, Alanis. All right, and this was started by our New Mexico ambassador, who goes by New Mexico Chip on the forum. And he posted a post where he's wondering whether the 1-1 No Limit Hold'em game, and I love my notes, by the way, 1-1 NLHE Hold'em. So yeah, I just made fun of the educational system, and I'm a victim of it too. Whether the 1-1 No Limit Hold'em game is destroying the poker economy. Now, I don't think he means it's that dire, but how concerned should we be if more and more players scale down to 1-1 No Limit or 2-4 Limit from 1-2 No Limit? And I think that's an interesting point there before we go. I think some early posters there, I think, missed the point of his post. And not that, you know, should we not have 2-4 Limit or 1-1 No Limit. But really what he's concerned about is, hey, I'm a 1-2 player. And all these players are gravitating to the 1-1 now. So I'm having a harder time finding a good variety of games for me. Obviously, some of the quote-unquote juicier players, depending on how you define that, that's another unrelated discussion we're having on the forum. But if those players leave my 1-2 game to 1-1, is that should I be concerned about the future of my 1-2 game? Or I guess beer limit player 4-8 game.
I think it's too small of a test. I mean, I don't think that because of that one little area where he's from, that it's going to destroy it everywhere. I mean, maybe in his area he can't get any more than that.
You haven't seen that anywhere else?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, everywhere I play poker, there's a variety. So I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me
to
say.
There's a variety. I mean, he's not saying there's not a variety. He's just saying.
No, he is. He's saying there's. You just said that. He said that there's no variety.
Well,
I think games
saying,
that he can play in.
I don't know what the exact numbers are, but he's saying more like something like there used to be 8-1-2 games and no 1-1 games. We walked in this room, and now there's 4-4.
I mean,
there's still there's more variety, I guess, if you're talking about the limits in that sense. But there's less variety of tables of the game that he prefers to play. That's the point.
I think I don't know.
I mean, obviously, there's a 1-1 game being played at the room I play in a lot, and if they didn't have that, you know, some of those players would be playing 2-4 limits, some of those players would be playing 1-2 no limit, I think. So, I mean, it does have an effect.
I don't know. I don't think it's going to destroy any poker economy. I mean, I feel like if people want to play poker, they're going to play whatever's out there. And if they can't afford to play it, that's one thing. But everybody can afford 1-1.
Okay, but that's what I'm saying. What happens if all the 1-2 dries up and everybody plays 1-1? Are you still excited?
So in other words, am I not going to play because I don't want to play 1-1?
I'm not saying that. I mean, you're probably still going to be playing. Are you going to be more frustrated because you're playing this 1-1 now instead of the 1-2?
Well, if there's no 1-2 game, then the 1-2 players are playing 1-1-2. So... Or 1-1 as well.
So players are, but the structure is a little bit different.
I think any good player can succeed anywhere. If you're good and you enjoy the game, you can figure out how to enjoy it. I know you don't like to play the lower limits, but I mean, if that's all I can play, I'll play it. You know, I just want to play poker.
Well, that's interesting, I think.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know. I mean, the initial comments on the forum, which I think missed the point of it, were saying, you know, hey, if these people want to play in these games with these really high rate percentages, then let them, you know, who cares? And I think that was, you know, I kind of followed that up by saying, you know, hey, these are the kind of games that the house makes money on, so, you know, as long as they're not impacting the game you want to play, they're the ones paying for the room to be able to offer the bigger games where they don't make as much money. But I can see this, you know, at the, I mean, the economy is obviously getting a little bit better, it's not out of the woods yet, but you know, I think one of the dangers here in Florida when the limits change here is that people didn't know how to properly play 1-2 no limit.
Yeah.
Managers mentioned that and really wanted to convince them to play a 4-8 limit game, which probably has the same amount of money involved, but just a different style. But you're not going to lose your whole stack on one hand in a 4-8 limit. And, of course, that never happened. And then what happened is we had people playing 1-2 and losing $1,000 on hand when they used to lose $100. And then, boom, they're gone from the economy, or they have to come and play 1-1 with a $20 buy-in and keep buying in, and that's not a very fun game.
Well, I mean, I guess there's two ways to look at it, but there's the side that says they're giving what the people want, because they're not going to be a 1-1 game unless people want it. And then the other side is that they, you know, they'll spread what they want to make the rake. I mean, of course, if you're going to suggest a 4-8 limit game because they're going to get max rake out of it every single pot, whereas a no limit, it'll fold around 5 out of every 10 hands or whatever, and they're not going to get the rake. So, of course, they're suggesting that. So, I don't know. But to get back to his original point was, would a game like that, could it destroy the poker economy? I think it only takes 8 or 9 people to want to play a different game for it to be spread. And if enough people want to do it and see the economy going down and you're losing too many players or whatever, I think that it would happen. I mean, if people want to play, they're going to do whatever they can to play, whether that means talking at the table at the 1-1 saying, why are we playing 1-1 when we could play in 1-2 or 2-5 or whatever, and get enough people interested in it. So I don't think it's come to that yet. I think it's getting popular because everybody wants to play and enjoy themselves, and some people maybe know they don't want to enjoy themselves buying in for 2 or 300. They want to buy in for 80 or 60 or whatever it is and have fun. So it just seems to be what's popular in his area, you know. I mean, yeah, there may be one game. I think I know the game you're talking about, and it used to be a 50-cent dollar game, and the house got tired of the 50-cent chips and made it 1-1. It wasn't the people, so it would have been even worse or lower. I used to love that game. I crushed it. I missed that game terribly.
Well, I think I hear what you're saying about it. It only takes 9 people, but I think you're also misjudging how hard it is to get 9 people to do something. I mean, I guarantee you there's hundreds of 4-8 limit players here in Tampa Bay, but we can never get them all together in one place enough to get one table going consistently. So,
well, I mean, I think it depends on how desperate you are, too. I mean, it's the level of desperation. If it's really, really bothering you, and it's really, really bothering these other hundreds of people who don't play 4A but want to, I mean, you could do something. You could start a petition. You can go online and go to a forum and say, let's agree to meet on this time. I mean, there's a lot of things you could do if you've been that proactive. I don't know if everybody who wants to play 4A are that proactive. They'd rather just show up at the place and have a game running, which isn't going to happen, then get frustrated. So it depends how proactive you are.
Well, I think that speaks more to Chip's point then. You know, it's hard to motivate or rally players for something like that.
Yeah, maybe.
And it's hard to convince players that are scaling down to 1-1 that it's probably not a better game for them. So, I mean, you're asking a lot of effort on some players' parts to get something that most players probably would prefer or perceive to be a better game.
Well, you know, it's surprising to me that around here that there's not really a 4-8 game, because usually they build games around one Rube who is really bad at the game. So, I mean, all you got to do is show up at the place you want to play and say, hey, I want to play a 4-8 game. Put it out there that they'll build a game around me. Call it the Scott Long 4-8 Limit Hold'em game, and they will come out in droves. There will be a list
they
so long.
They did that one room, and unfortunately, the fire marshal had to be called.
That's what I was going
to
say.
Left all the other games and trampled over each other to get at the table. So, you know, but I'm not invited back.
I do wonder what would happen is if they went into the room and said, hey, can we put something up saying, if you're interested in playing this game, give us your email address or whatever, and we'll try to get a game going at a certain time. And I just wonder how proactive Chip and those people have been trying to get what they want instead of just letting it happen around them.
And his story is a little different than mine. I mean, I'm talking about a fundamentally different game.
Right.
Going 1-2 to a 4-8 limit. You know, what he's more worried about is a 1-2 game, which he's playing now, which you don't need to put up a list. I mean, people have it. They're still playing it. He's just more worried about, you know, like I said, I don't know what the actual numbers were, but I mean, just as an example, if it goes from 8 tables to 4, what happens if it goes down to 2, and then eventually just everybody's playing 1-1, which, you know, if you look at the history of poker, that's happened. I mean, how many times have we talked about on the show now that, you know, people used to play stud?
Yeah,
you can't find stud anywhere anymore. Yeah.
And draw poker.
And then limit's dying now. Everywhere it's no limit, and then you got variations of no limit. Now maybe 1-1's a new 1-2, which used to be the old 4-8, which used to be the old stud. You know, so.
Well, the underlying theme for all of those stories is that poker has still survived. It's just not the poker that you want to play,
right, exactly.
or someone doesn't want to play. So I think that it won't destroy the economy. It'll just change the landscape of it. Yeah.
All right. Very good.
Very interesting. Okay, well, we have a hotline clip from someone we haven't heard from in a while, Godar, and this is pretty funny. It's 813-448-1120. You call, we use it, we give. Let's hear what he has to say.
Hey, guys, Godar here with a math question. I have some friends who host an occasional pretty casual poker tournament, and for the sake of argument, I'll say it's a $100 buy-in. At this tournament that's coming up, you get you get 1,000 chips to play, and you get an additional 200 chips if you show up in your pajamas. So that's 20% more chips. What is the value of showing up in your pajamas? Is it 20% of 100 bucks, 20 bucks? How do you calculate the humiliation, the cost of your pajamas, and all that? Or is the add-on worth less than 20% because you already have chips? I don't really know how to calculate it. Thanks, guys.
All right, now this is a little tough one for me because I'm kind of a feel player when it comes to wearing pajamas to games. I'm not really a math player, you know, Gundam has trained me now to think that when I'm feeling whether it's the flannel or the cotton, I'm actually making a mathematical calculation as to which one I would enjoy more. But I don't think I'm to the point yet where I can actually calculate that.
Let me tell you, if I show up at our home game this week wearing pajamas, you better not be feeling anything. All right. The big problem for me here is I don't own pajamas. I sleep al fresco. So,
yeah, I was going to say, I mean, you're one of those big, tough Italian guys that you're not like us hardy Midwestern white guys that you know, have the long PJs and the Kermit the Frog t-shirts on. I'm sure if you you wear anything to bed, it's what you came into the earth with, right?
Yeah, it's definitely al fresco. I don't put on the wife beaters, so I don't own those. Just so everybody knows, I'm not the wife beater wearing type. But that is pretty funny. If you, I mean, hey, I would do it. I mean, if I'm gonna get more chips, I would. I mean, I would do it. I mean, I don't know if you know. I mean, you know, I can see now. I can see Gambit doing something like, all right, you know, wear your best leather hooded, you know, thing, or, and you know, just trying to get somebody to wear something really obscene or whatever. But you know, pajamas is harmless enough, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're harmless enough in the actual game. But here's the thing: you would have to actually dress them and drive over. What happens if some ass clown runs into your car and then you got to be out there doing a statement to the cop, and you're, you know, you're wearing your
you got to wear the bunny type with the footsies, you know, from the
yeah,
Christmas
the
story.
Hello Kitties with the, you know, the whole feet in them. You know, that's gonna be tough to explain, isn't it? And then he's going to, like, have you been drinking, sir? And you'd be like, no, not a drop. Okay, sure. Let's have you walk us 7 or 8, 9 lines here.
And then he's like, all right, you have to calculate the cost of, you know, like, what cost is it to you? What's it worth you to get to run that risk of being pulled over? You know, how many times have you been pulled over in the last 10? Well, I've been pulled over once in the last week, so. Me, I'm not wearing any pajamas, I guess, to Gambit's house this week, but that's pretty funny.
Obviously, he's talking about the embarrassment factor. So
yeah.
It depends on the person. So, I mean, the embarrassment factor for me would be zero because, you know, I don't care what I look like, what people say. Now, for you, though, that would be a pretty high cost. I mean, you're probably going to need about 7-8 times your sharding stack.
Yeah,
to put up with that kind of embarrassment.
Yeah, if it's like 10%, it's just not worth it. Just not worth it. But, you know, there are some cool pajamas, I would suppose. I mean, I guess you could have, like, your favorite sports team or the Flash or something.
That's,
you know,
true.
You know?
Yeah, but you could show up like Sheldon, you know, with your little, you know, your underoos, right?
Yeah, exactly. You could have your Superman underwear on underneath it. And, you know,
Aquaman, of course, would bring Aquaman to the next Las Vegas meetup, you know, because that makes sense.
You know, at least it's not like, you know, I mean, it's not really a public thing. It's still, it's a private home game or whatever. It's not like you have to show up at the middle of Caesars in Vegas with this outfit on like you do in a prop bet or something. So, I don't know. I guess if the chip stack was decent, I might consider it.
All right, Godard. Well, we appreciate you ringing in. It's always good to hear from you, even if we don't hear from you very often. And we will be happy to send you a T-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys. The Antiup Store at antiupstore.com, and you could probably get that in flannel or cotton or, you know, whatever it is that's going to accentuate, you know, the jewelry you could be wearing to your next game.
All right, our mailbag this week comes from SPC Tanner Smith.
Specialist for you.
I know, I'm just, you know, officially saying it. But I love when we get our wonderful servicemen writing in, and he says, love the podcast. I first came across it about 2 years ago when I was first deployed to the Middle East and haven't stopped listening since. I am deployed yet again. My problem is with one individual and how he shows his cards. When it is time to show down, he will stack his two cards on top of each other, show one, and then would wait for the other players to show their cards. He then slides the top card off to the side, showing his second card if he won with it. I feel that this is improper. Not sure on what level, if he is breaking some kind of rule or just has horrible etiquette. If I am at a showdown with him and I call him, I make it a point to tell him to show his second card since I called his bet. He gets mad whenever I have him do this, even though several individuals at the table back me up. I don't like looking like a bad guy for making him do something properly, but I am tired of his antics. This is awesome. I mean, I just can't believe that there are still people out there who just love to rub it in.
Yeah.
You know, like that. And when we're talking about, and these guys have guns, man. You know what I mean? You know, you shouldn't be doing this. Brutal, but that, yeah, he's absolutely right. It's terrible etiquette. He called you. If you didn't win, muck. If you did win, show. That's like the worst slow roll you could possibly do.
Well, I think that it speaks to a bigger problem is, because we see these people every day in a poker room somewhere, don't we?
Yeah.
And some of them, I think, know it, and they're doing it just for the attention. But I really honestly think most of these people don't think that there's anything wrong with it. that they're there to have fun, and it's the drama of poker. I mean, I guess maybe TV has the blame for this. You know, even though you never see anybody slow roll on TV, it's just the, you know, hey, we're having fun. Oh, I'm gonna the big reveal. We'll find out who stole American Idol after the break. You know, that kind of stuff that's going on, and I think those people just don't know it's bad. And I think for a lot of people, when you tell them that, or probably more to the point, somebody in authority, which would be like a floor or a dealer, then it probably sinks home a little bit, though some of those people will never change. Obviously, you don't have you're not going to fly Bat Savage into Afghanistan here to tell this guy that he's doing it wrong. So, I mean, it's really incumbent on Specialist Smith here and the folks that are backing him up to convince this guy. But, I mean, I don't know what you do to a guy like that. That obviously, there's a lot of people telling him, hey, this isn't cool. Quit being a jerk. They keep doing it. I don't know what you do. What do you do?
I have one very long word for him. Waterboarding.
Oh.
Teach this guy a lesson. No, but really, I think it's Hollywood. I think that's what happens. And I say, yes, people are Hollywooding. I mean, think about Rounders when Worm is playing the Russians in that underground game, and he's like, oh, yeah, you got the jacks? Okay, well I got the sevens, too, or whatever. You know what I mean? He slow rolls them, and they think it's funny and whatever, and it's really not funny, especially when you're playing for money or in a tournament or whatever. It's just not funny. It's not cool.
I mean, I guess this is the problem, though. I mean, we know it's not funny. Our litter writer doesn't think it's funny. He knows it's not funny. But how do you convince these jackknifes that are doing it that it isn't funny? Because to them, I mean, I'm not defending them at all, but I can understand that, you know, hey, just relax, dude. We're just playing poker here. I'm having fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have a good response to that.
Do it to him.
Just, you shouldn't do it. That's not the way you should do it. Well, I don't care. What do you mean? Why not? What's the big deal?
Well, do it to him. When it's a big pot, do it to him and see what he does when he loses the big pot.
You're getting down at his level now, right?
Well, I mean, sometimes you got to show people what it's like. You know,
all right, but,
taste their own medicine.
So you do that, and do you think this guy's going to be ticked off by it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if he...
Probably not.
He gets mad when you make him show the cards. He might get mad when you, you know, use his little signature move.
You're right, but I would know a lot of these people would probably say, oh, yep, you got me.
Well, here's the deal.
I think anything about it.
I try to be helpful on the show. And you don't. You're trying to. you're. What are you telling that? Hey, sorry. Sorry, Specialist Smith. You're screwed. This guy's in your home game. Nothing you can do about it. You're gonna have to. So I'm trying to come up with an answer here. Taste of his own medicine. There's a saying right there. People say it all the time because people do it all the time. All right.
What do you think? I will grant you a taste of the medicine. What I'm saying is, I'm now on level 3 of this question. What have you given him the Robitussin, and he likes the taste of it.
And he likes the taste of it.
Says, yeah, give me more. Then what do you do?
All right, well, then maybe you do a penalty.
Then you're in a situation where everybody starts doing this.
If enough people vote to penalize him for doing it, he won't do it anymore. Or he won't play in your game, you know?
All right, so you're really going to take that chance with this game. Now, I did cut out a little bit of this letter, too. I mean, he was... Tanner here was happy that he was been welcomed into this group of players that are playing.
Well, he has other people backing him up, though, so it's not just him getting upset. He said he has other players backing him up on
it. Yeah, that's true.
So if they feel that way and it's their game, then maybe they bring it up and he doesn't, but he tells them on the side, hey, look, we need to penalize people for doing stuff that's hurting the etiquette and the flow and the overall feeling of this game or whatever. You know, whatever. I mean, it's your game. Yeah, okay. You can do what you want with it. So, but it is brutal. I mean, that is so brutal, you know, to just make somebody think they won and then show the other card that they didn't win. I mean, it's fun for him and he gets his kicks or whatever, but for the other guys, it's got to be, you know, you're there to have fun. You're there to play, enjoy yourselves, not be miserable and fighting all the time. So,
true.
You know, but again, there's guns everywhere, so I wouldn't want to tick anybody off.
All right, Tanner, we appreciate you listening and sending it in, and we will be sending you a deck of J-Design playing cards, official playing cards of Ant. Yep. Pick up your own decks in the Antiup store at antiupstore.com, and maybe we can get Jason from J-Design to design a special deck that when you slow roll, they explode. Or a little, like, you know, a little the punching bag that comes out and doors you in the face. That would be better.
What do they call it? The motivator on that show, Wipeout. People stay too long before they want to jump onto the big balls. That big motivator thing comes around, swings them, knocks them off the whole level.
Oh, it's good stuff. Remember, folks, send your mailbag questions to podcast@antiupmagazine.com.
Hey, we got a call to floor, too. Full show this week.
Yeah, we got everything going today. Firing on all pistons.
This comes from Ken Allard, and he says, we were playing a $60 No Limit Hold'em tournament at a Connecticut casino, and there's only two up there, so take your pick which one it was. And there was a boyfriend and girlfriend at my table. They were speaking in a language other than English. They got involved in a hand where the board was ace, king, jack, nine, ace. The boyfriend moved all in, and she called. He showed ace three, and she looked at her hand, flashing me the ace, and put them on the table as if to muck and says, you win. One of the players at the table asks to see her hand. The dealer turns her hand over and shows ace six. The dealer splits the pot, and they each get half. Players start grumbling about how she was playing well and would know that this is clearly a chop. The dealer calls the floor, who says he needs to check with his boss since we were saying this is collusion and a clear chip dump. The floor never comes back, but I overheard them telling the dealer that he was wrong to ship her half the pot, and they never did anything about the collusion except make our table the next to be broken. This is clearly collusion, as she was dumping chips to him. Is splitting them up enough of a penalty? Were they wrong reprimanding the dealer for giving her half the pot? Is her hand live if it did not hit the muck pile? And see what Jody had to say.
All right, Jody's right to the point this week. Yes, the hand is still live. Yes, the dealer is correct to split the... Yes, it was collusion. No more yeses. Okay, yes. the couple should have been removed from the tournament and asked to leave.
Well, one of the things that bothers me is it's a tournament and he was all in. You have to show the hand, I thought. It's not a cash game. So I thought that the hand has to be shown anyway.
Yeah.
Right?
That's a good point.
I mean, so from there on...
He's all in. Doesn't say what she is, but yeah, it's an all in. I mean, maybe she was... But yeah. If she
no matter what, someone's all in.
Yeah, somebody's all in.
And the hands have to be shown. So to me, right there, the dealer messed up anyway.
Right.
And I do, so that makes the hand live because you have to see both hands. They make every effort to see both hands. And
Very true.
And also, she could have colluded, but that doesn't mean he was colluding. So now he gets screwed because his girlfriend was being nice to him, and he didn't. How do we know he was, you know, guilty by association?
The fan reaches over the fence in the outfield and dorks a ball.
That's
how
right.
Do you know what team he's rooting for?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Huh. Guilty by association.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree. Yeah, hand is live. Dealer should have split the pot, but the dealer should have made the cards get turned over, though. And, I mean, I guess it was collusion. You know, she was colluding. I don't know if he was, but she was.
Again, I mean, this is the thing where, you know, if you check the nuts, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize it, or I didn't mean it, or I didn't know that rule. You still get a penalty.
Yeah.
You know, hey, I was speeding. I didn't know it was, I thought it was 35 here, not 45. It's still speeding.
thanks for putting oil in the, some lemon in my cut wound there.
So, yeah, I mean, collusion's kind of strong, I guess, but I mean, it's still a penalty.
Yeah, penalty, but not removed from the tournament. Really? I mean, I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, it's part of the investigation that needs to go on. I mean, obviously, there's a pattern going on here that I don't want to pile on this dealer, but obviously, you're right. Didn't table the cards correctly, and obviously, he isn't. And of course, we're getting this from Ken's viewpoint.
Right. Right.
Well, but if it was as he's saying it is, wasn't doing anything to one stop the non-English from being spoken at the table, which is a problem, and two. Keeping an eye on, I mean, I'm not asking for my dealers to be a Navy SEAL team here, but, you know, when there's a husband and wife, a boyfriend, girlfriend, two business partners, two best friends, you know, there should be kind of heightened looking out of one eye as to how the things are going. And,
yeah.
You know, at least making it known to a floor after your push, maybe, that, you know, hey, I'm not accusing anything, but keep an eye on these people. And then have the floor come over and watch and make the decision. It doesn't seem like any of that was going on here, right?
Absolutely. It just, clearly they were speaking in a different language. She even shows the hand and then mucks it. That to me is just, they're not thinking on the correct level. If they're colluding, you know what I mean? No, you're absolutely right. I just think it's, I mean, obviously they were probably trying to do the best they can to win together, and they deserve to be kicked out of this tournament, but maybe there's something where you warn, I mean, without a warning or whatever, you know, I mean, you warn them or you take one person off, make sure that one person is the first to get moved.
Well, I did say to Ken that I think it's kind of extreme just to eliminate him from the tournament based on this one hand.
Right.
I mean, there has to be some kind of discussion, has to be some kind of pattern, has to be some, hey, if you do that again, not on everything. I mean, obviously, there's some things that you can yank somebody right out of a tournament. But, I mean, there should be some kind of discussion that, hey, what's going on here?
Yeah.
You should know better. And here's a warning next time you guys are out. And probably banned for a while, too, I would think, you know.
And it would be one thing if he showed, like, ace 10 and sees that it's higher than the 9, even though it still doesn't play. That would have confused her. But when he had ace 3 and she knows she has ace 6, why would she fold?
Yeah, I think it would be the opposite. If he had ace 6 and she had ace 8, oh, you got me out kicked without realizing the board. That you could almost sell that.
Yeah, like ace 10. Ace 10 is much bigger.
You can't sell this anyway other than a chip dump.
Exactly. So,
unless you thought the 3 was a 8. Maybe he had one heart. The ace is on top of the other 3 and he was going to reveal the other 3 later on.
Or maybe it was like that Friends episode when Joey thought the 3 was an 8 because there was chocolate on the card. And it made it look like an 8 to him, and he started crying. So maybe that's what happened here. Maybe the boyfriend had chocolate on the 3, and it looked like an 8, so she mucked.
All right, Ken, we appreciate you sending in the call to the floor. We're going to send you a grinder bracelet from Pro Poker Gear, which sells much more than terrific bracelets for home games or leagues, including hats, T-shirts, and gifts in the Annie Up store at andyupstore.com. And remember to send your call to the floor to us, a podcast at andyupmagazine.com, or post it in our forum at andyupmagazine.com/forum. All right, well, Chris, last week I made the cardinal sin of poker podcasting.
You offended our listeners.
Not only offended the listeners, I offended Canadian poker player listeners.
Oh, man, that's our biggest fan base.
You just can't do that because, you know, and I offended them on a quote-unquote Olympic sport.
Quote-unquote. I think he just did it again.
And, you know, they take that stuff seriously up there.
Oh, man.
They're not allowed to throw down because, you know, hey, they got free health care. You know, I rough them up. Doctor's going to patch them up, put them right back in the game.
Oh, man.
But you know, we made a little offhanded joke about curling. And within 2 hours of posting the show, boosh, everybody in Canada had emailed us. So my favorite was Chris, who writes in a lot, and this is what he had to say. Making my way through this week's podcast, and I just had to throw down a challenge. If and when you make the leap to distribution in Canada, I will see you on the ice. And we'll have a good old-fashioned curling skills challenge. Nothing fancy. Maybe some button draws, sweeping for weight, or even just throwing the 50-pound rock without landing flat on your ass, LOL. Nowhere near as easy as it looks. Just felt I had a defender game up here. Not that I even play it anymore at all. But I didn't meet my now wife in less than 10 years ago. All right, so here's the thing, Chris. I'm taking Chris's challenge seriously here, all right?
All right. I'll go buy the brooms.
Now, of course, he says, you know, once we get up to Canada. When am I going to go to Canada? He's going to have to come down here. But here's the thing. I went out this week to Walmart. I bought all their Swiffers. And here's the thing. I think you need to come over tomorrow. We'll go over to that 55 and older community right next to our neighborhood.
Yeah.
We'll hop the fence when no one's there. You know, 4 o'clock, dinner time. And we'll storm the little shuffleboard court there. And we'll push that little fishing sinker around the table. And we'll be ready to go. We'll be ready to go.
How much is it to rent a Zamboni? Because I think we could, you know, one pass with a Zamboni on one of those shuffleboard courts. That'd be just fine. But, I mean, of course there's some actual skill to squatting down and sliding with a rock in your hand. So, I mean, I don't discount that at all. Though I do think that if you can wear sneakers and have a broom in your hand and be part of an Olympic team, I'm all for it.
See, and, I mean, that's the thing. If people think I was making fun of it, I wasn't. I'm like, I look down at my fat body, old and gray, and when I turn on the TV once every 4 years in February, I'm like, oh my gosh, I still have a chance. And I'm serious. I love watching curling. In fact, actually, you know, Laura and I were up in, I think, Canada during the last Olympics. Yeah, that's right, because that's when the Canadians beat the Americans in hockey. And we were at bars, and I'm like, oh, curling's on. We're not leaving until the curling's done. And she didn't get it. I love it. I think it's a fun game. So I feel bad that I made people feel. I mean, obviously, but seriously, you look at people on there. I'm not the only one, I think, that looks at these people and say, "Hey, that could be me."
Yeah.
You're never going to see me watching the 100 meter dash going. Yeah.
Okay. Do you think that in Canada, like the curling teams, like the guy who throws the rock is like, it's kind of like a rock band, and like he's Bono, and like everyone else is Larry and the Edge. And Adam. I mean, because really, the guy who throws the rock, he's the guy, he's got to be the star. Everyone else, who keeps track of who's sweeping? But you look at the face of the guy, or the gal, you know, sliding on the ice in that pose where their leg is stretched out, and they're, you know, that's the rock star in Canada right there, because that's the person getting all the FaceTime, and I think that's pretty cool, you know.
Yeah.
I'm the Rock. You know, that's my nickname, the Rock. You know, or something. You know, I just
that's your name.
It's a totally different thing. I mean, around here, I don't know anybody who does curling, but I'm sure in Canada, everybody knows someone who curls.
Well, yeah, we got another email from a listener that said, "Aha, you said they're doing Florida," and they sent me a link to Fort Myers, where they do it down there. I'm like,
yeah.
Hey, you know, it's 2 hours. I mean, you know, my mom doesn't live anymore. She can't drive me 2 hours each way every day to help me. Become one of those Olympic stories that are broadcast. But I seriously, every 4 years I look forward to curling, and every 4 years I wish they would get it going around here, because I'd go out there and try that stuff. I'll fall on my ass.
LOL.
I can wear pajamas.
Oh, man. All right, well, thanks for keeping Scott in line, Chris. I really appreciate it. I have a little housekeeping going on. Hey, checkraise.com. Our own Antiup ambassador, Mike Owens, they're running a contest for favorite poker blog on his website. Of course, the website is checkraise.com. We're not on it because we don't have a blog anymore.
No. We're blogless.
We're blogless.
We're bloated, but we're blogless.
Bloated and blogless. That sounds like a good t-shirt. So check it out on his website and vote for your favorite. Some of the ones on there are like Pokerati's on there. And so, you know, and that's it. Also makes it interesting for us, because we're going to probably have something like that within our Reader's Choice Awards, which will be coming up pretty soon. We'll probably have Poker Blog on there as well. So this will give you a taste of, you know, of what's out there. And maybe you guys can check them out and then be more informed when we have our own awards as well.
Absolutely. And then a reminder that I am hopping a plane on Sunday, flying down to Palm Beach Kennel Club for the Playing the Horse event. On February 19th, that's a Sunday. Stop by and say hi if you're playing. A lot of buzz about this, man. The $500 million guarantee, which starts today, actually, was sounds like it's going to be a sellout.
Had over 1,100 people entered already, didn't it? 1,100, I think?
300. Yeah,
300. That's what I mean, yeah. So
yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
And that was as of last week. So.
And tune in next week when Scott has to explain that he has to split the winnings with me, if he has any. All right, don't forget our cruise. Be sure to check out the 2012 Poker Cruise schedule at antiupmagazine.com/cruise. As we always say, three great cruises, and we got people backing us up on that. A lot of testimonials out there. March 17th out of Tampa, which is close to sold out, the last I had heard. August 27th out of Port Canaveral, and November 10th out of Baltimore. All right, let's see what's going on in the news desk this week.
Churchill Downs, the owner of the track that hosts the Kentucky Derby, has bought the assets of Bluff Media in anticipation of future regulation of online poker.
We turned them down, right? I mean, we said, you know
yeah,
what?
Yeah.
No, sorry. You're going to have to go buy something else, some other
You're
inferior
You're
going
to have
product.
To come with more than $100 million.
It's not enough to make us give this up.
Yeah.
We've
got
sorry.
Listeners that want to hear us on the podcast without big sponsors.
That's right.
So we did it for you.
That's right.
For you, the listeners.
So we gave up $100 million. Actually, we don't know what the cost was. I don't want people calling me up and saying, "Hey, you should do your research. The whole deal didn't cost that much." No, they didn't release the figure, so we have no idea.
It was not disclosed.
And we certainly don't think Bluff Media is worth $100 million. But
if it is, we were calling our banker.
Yeah, if it is, we're doing something. Mergers and acquisitions, hello? Yeah, hi. We have a company we want to talk to you about. All right, poker pro Noah Schwartz, local here to Florida, almost missed out on playing for a World Poker Tour title last week when he was scheduled to appear for jury duty on the same day that he was deep in a run at the Seminole Hard Rock in Hollywood. The court told Schwartz he wasn't needed, and he went on to finish 18th for 10 grand. I mean, the Schwartz be with you. That's what I thought the court... I thought that was going to be written in there somewhere. Like, and the court told him, "May the Schwartz be with you."
Yeah, Mel Brooks was not the judge.
Greatest movie all time. Greatest parody movie of all time.
Oh, absolutely. Rick Moranis, best work he's ever done.
That was a brilliant movie.
Go past this. Never go back to this again.
I mean, how many people thought of Pizza the Hut, but just didn't have the stones to make a movie and have him as the character in the movie?
50 pound stones. Yeah, absolutely.
That was great.
But no, here, seriously, I think this is a great story. You know, if folks go, Sun Sentinel did a great story on it. You can go to sunsentinel.com. But Noah never thought, or at least he told the reporter, but I believe him, never thought for a minute about skipping out on jury duty.
So he would just say, blind me off, I'm going?
And it would be an 8-hour commitment at $40 per day. So $5 an hour. He would have given up a shot at, I forget what the winner in this tournament got, pretty close to $200,000, I think, right?
Yeah.
He would have gladly given that, I wouldn't say gladly, but he would have felt it was his duty as a citizen to give up that shot to go do jury duty. You know, we're talking a lot on the show about, you know, how poker players are perceived in the general public. Right now I'm proposing put Noah Schwartz on posters, commercials, everything. Get him on a USO tour and say, hey, I was willing to give up all this riches to do my civic duty. Because think about it. How many people in the world go to great lengths to get out of jury duty?
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
I'm sure he could have called him up and said, hey, you know, I want to serve, but, you know, hey, I'm in the middle of this tournament. This is my profession. It's, you know, it's not like the first day. It's like day four. Do you really need me? But he wasn't going to do that. And unfortunately, as it turned out, they called. I mean, because obviously they have a bunch of jurors, so they never know. But
I once showed up carrying a lightsaber and wearing one of those Jedi robes, and told him I was from Planet Zarnon, and that I didn't have to serve jury duty. So actually, the one time I got called for it, I really thought I was going to get called. I really did. They were asking me all these questions, and. And I was hoping to get called because at the time I was working nights at the Times, and that's a day shift, and I get to go home early, and I was like, and the Times pays you for jury duty, so you make your own money plus the 40 or whatever. I was like, please pick me, please pick me. And then they said, what do you do for a living? And that was it. Why don't you tell them you're a journalist and you're an editor, and that was it. Sorry. You're too smart for this journal panel or something. I don't know what it was they said, but, you know, you have too much opinion or something. I'm like, opinion? I'm supposed to be impartial. Yeah, right. And then they cut me. So I was pretty disappointed. I wanted to get picked, but, you know, kudos to Schwartz for doing that.
Yeah, round of applause.
Yeah, that's really cool.
All right, and finally, tennis bad boy John McEnroe last week said, quote, if you had told me poker would outrate tennis 25 years ago, I would have laughed at you. As he lamented the lacking interest in his sport now. What do we think about this?
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable. I mean, as far as when you say, what do you think about it, you think that he can't believe poker's that big, or he just can't believe the fall tennis set?
Some people are probably going to jump to the wrong conclusion that he's picking on poker. I don't think that's what he's doing at all. I think he's just making the point that, you know, hey, here's a card game that people are watching and interested in on TV and in real life. More than this sport that's been around for, I don't know how long tennis has been around. I'm not going to try to, already ticked off the curling world. I'm not going to tick off the tennis world, no. You know, when you think of major sports, you ask the average Joe in the street, tennis is going to rate higher than poker, I think, right?
Oh, sure.
And
especially
what he's saying
here,
I mean, obviously the true interest in it, he thinks it's people are more interested in it than tennis.
Well, the only experience I have with something similar to this was when I worked in the sports department. I wrote a column about bowling because they were trying to spruce up the ratings for bowling on ESPN and they were having the people cheer while the guy was bowling, and they put on these heavy gold pins which were hard to knock over, and they were doing all these sort of, you know, circus things to try to make it a more entertaining and more fun. And when I did my research, the ratings for bowling were actually higher on ESPN than NHL games. And I said, here you go. Here's a perfect example. You know, sort of this blue-collar, quote, sport. People didn't really – a lot of people don't think of bowling as a sport because you can eat nachos and be overweight, kind of like curling. But to me, bowling was always – it was my passion, and it was always a sport to me. And when people found that out, that the ratings were better for bowling than they were for NHL on ESPN, they took a shock. They thought, oh, NHL is hockey. It's a real sport, blah, blah, blah. Same thing kind of here now, but, you know, tennis is a real sport, but really people are passionate about stuff they can actually do, I think. Because it's harder to be a hockey player than it is to be a bowler, right?
Well, yeah.
It's harder to be a good... Tennis. Yeah, I mean, you can win a poker tournament by lucking into it. You can't win a tennis tournament by lucking into it.
That's true.
So, I mean, a lot of people can relate more to poker and card games sitting around the kitchen table than they can around tennis. So it's understandable. It just took years for them to find a way to put poker in the mainstream and put it on TV. Had they invented the whole cam in the 70s when he was fighting Bjorn Borg or whatever that guy's name was, it might have contended with it then too. It's just now they finally found a way to convey it to the masses. So, but
well,
yeah,
I got a couple tips here for my friend Jim McEnroe. First of all, I have one of these 3D TVs.
Yeah.
And I watch tennis every time it's on there.
Is it good?
I have absolutely no idea what's going on. I've never played tennis. I don't really understand it. But in 3D, awesome! So they need to find a way to get people to buy 3D TVs and start watching. If not, you talk about the hole card camera and how that brought poker. They need to put a camera in the tennis ball.
In the ball, yes.
Did you not watch that every time it was on?
Especially 3D.
I suffer through that during the home poker game instead of that crashed ice crap that I made you watch last time.
Especially,
that would be awesome.
Can you imagine that in 3D? The ball is going right at the racket, and the racket is swinging right at you in 3D. Oh, my God, that would be awesome.
Not even 3D, but 3D. Oh, my God, 3D would be totally
3D would
cool,
be insane.
Even a 2D. Can you imagine that? That's a whole new way of playing. I would love that.
It reminds me of the soccer analogy. If you want to get interested in soccer, put an extra ball out there. I'm telling you. It will work. Put two balls on the field. Put two pucks on the hockey rink. You're going to see some people tuning in. well, there's something else I wanted to say, too, about this tennis thing. But oh, you know what? I played tennis for years when I was younger. I played up till I was about 18 or so. And one thing that always got me about the scoring, you say you know nothing about it.
Well, I mean, I know the basics. I don't know the strategy. When I'm watching it, I don't know what I'm watching.
Do you know the scoring? Do you know what the scoring means?
Yeah, when they say
15 love and all that?
Yeah, right.
One of the things that always got me was...
You can't just say 1 to 0.
Well, you know what deuce is, right? Deuce is when they're tied at 40.
Yeah, right.
Well, I always advocated that if it got to 30-30, it was actually deuce. Not because it officially is deuce, but because the exact same scoring pattern has to happen. You know, and I don't know why I'm bringing this up on a poker show. We're going off on one of our tangents, and I'm sure nobody cares. But when it's 40-40, it's deuce, and then you have to win two in a row. And if you don't, you win one, and someone else wins one, it goes back to deuce. The same thing would happen at 30-30. You have to win two in a row to win it, and if you don't win two in a row and the other guy wins one in between, then it's deuce because it's 40-40. So to me, when it gets to 30-30, they should just say deuce.
Yeah, for me, when they get to 30-30, they should just say 2-2.
2-2.
Seriously, that's why I don't like tennis, because it's ridiculous.
Yeah, how did I get 15 points for winning one point? Enough of that tangent, I'm sorry.
I'll say on this. I mean, this is a good comparison, though. I mean, going back to your hockey and bowling, I mean, in certain parts of the country, lots of people play hockey, obviously, recreationally. But tennis, I mean, is universal.
Yeah.
Around the country, there's racket clubs and tennis clubs and tennis courts in every city park, right?
Yeah.
Just like poker. I mean, you can play poker. All you need is a deck of cards and chips. So I think it's a good comparison of two things that people can play. I mean, and you could be 90 and playing tennis, you know?
Yeah. I just think that when you tune in, you're tuning in to watch the best. But when you tune into poker, you can literally see any Joe Schmo at the table.
Maybe they did a pro-am tennis.
Yeah, pro-am tennis, but that's what I want to watch.
With their camera in the ball.
I want to watch Scott Long running around the court with a headband. And
absolutely. I'll do that right after we kick some Canadian button in curling.
All right, we get to complete an O'Malley's move today. Let's refresh our memory. Here's part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a $1, $2, No Limit Hold'em home game. Everyone bought in for $100, and we're sitting at an 8-person table. The play is fairly scattered throughout, some extremely good, some really bad, and everywhere in between. The night is winding down as we sit with around $300, the second biggest stack at the table. We're under the gun, and we look down at the two of spades, two of hearts. As bad as this sounds, we're going to do a little min raise here to $4. We do this for two reasons. One, it might send a signal to the table that we have a bigger hand than we do. And if we get raised, we can re-raise. And two, we want to build a pot for set mining purposes. Our image is tight aggressive, and we're getting the respect we've worked for. In fact, we got a few strange looks at our min raise, and mixing things up is exactly what we want to do. We want to keep our opponents on their toes. We get exactly what we want. Six callers, including the blinds, and a missed small blind. The pot is 25, and the flop is 7 of clubs, 3 of diamonds, 2 of diamonds. Precisely what we'd hoped for. The blinds check, and it comes to us. Normally, we'd want to protect against possible flush draws. But with three people left to act behind us, we're going to go ahead and check here with the intention of check raising, knowing that if it gets to the button checked, he'll make a move for the pot. And we watch as it goes check, check, and right on schedule, the player on the button reaches for chips and places $16 into the $24 pot, making it $40. This player is the best at the table, and can be a pretty tricky player. He has us covered in chips, and this is where our min raise preflop is coming back to haunt us. You see, he missed his last two blind hands, and came back in to post the $3, buying the button. So he only had to call $2 more to win potentially $25 pre-flop. So he could have any two cards here. But at this point, there are only two hands that beat us, and we can't play scared. We planned to spring a trap, and we got a tasty morsel to walk right into it. Once the blinds fold, we triple his bet, making it 48, and enough to give him improper odds to make the call if he has a flush draw. 32 more to win 88 is enough to push out this savvy player with the flush draw and improper odds. Unless he calculates implied odds, but if another diamond comes that doesn't pair the board, he isn't getting another dime from us, and he has to know that. It's folded back around to him, and he thinks for a brief moment before pushing his stack into the middle. Wow. We didn't see that coming. So, is this a snap call? Easy fold? Or is there something to talk about here?
Gosh, it's going to be hard for me to fold here.
Yeah.
You know, only two hands beat us. And while either are entirely possible, they certainly are. 7-7-3-3, I would not be surprised if my opponent tabled those. But there's a host of lesser hands here, since we min-raised, that could have been in this pot. 7-3, 7-deuce, deuce-tray, flush-draw, straight-flush combinations. I think all those are likely to be more frisky here than usual since we min-raised. People love to punish min-raisers.
Yeah.
And it's probable that he could put us on a big pre-flop hand that missed here. Again, when I see a min-raise, I think aces, king, something like that, and I'm just looking to crush him. Since our opponent here knows that we're a solid player, I think he can have some confidence that his line will often get us to do what he wants here. So I'm not playing that game. I'm calling, and I'm telling him in all sincerity, nice hand. You table 7-7 or 3-3.
Yeah, I say this a lot on the show because I love to remind everybody that we really aren't that good. So I'm not good enough to fold in a home game with this big of a hand. And like you said, there are a lot of hands that don't respect us here who think that we don't have what we have. So even something like A7 suited, you know, would be a very plausible hand here. Top pair, top kicker would think it's very good. So there's no way I'm folding a set in a home game. Hey, I brought a couple of buy-ins. If I lose one on this hand, I lose one on this hand. I tend to get coolered a lot in our home games. This would probably just be another one of those cases, but I'm sorry. I'm not letting this hand go. I don't know. I guess, it's just a call, right? That's what it said at the end. It said he shoved, so...
Or he's all in.
Yeah, he's all in. Yeah, so obviously we call. To me, we call. I don't know what's going to happen here, but really, I'm not good enough in a home game to fold this set, so I'm interested in seeing what happens.
Hello again. Well, let's go over the hands he could have. Pocket sevens, maybe. Pocket threes are possible. Although set over set does happen, it doesn't happen as often as would warrant any worrying about. So we push these to the back of our minds. That leaves two possible hands. Two pair, or a flush draw. We're not quite sure this player would shove with just a flush draw or even with two pair, unless he's got us on complete air, and if so, he hasn't been paying attention. Our tight aggressive style has been on our sleeves the entire night, and a min-raise, check-raise situation has to scream strength. This is where those other levels come into play. What does he think we have? We wouldn't have just min-raised with ace-king or ace-queen. Speculative hands like these are better left won before the flop to the tight aggressive player. So that just leaves pocket pairs, which means his shove tells us he's got a big enough hand to not worry about an overpair. But if it were a made hand, a smooth call would have been more appropriate for the situation. Could we be up against an open-ended straight flush draw? Maybe a draw and a pair? If he has the latter, we're about a 70-30 favorite to take the pot. If it's the open-ended straight flush draw, we're roughly 60-40. If it's a bigger set, well, we're only a 5% favorite to take the pot. We decide to make the call, and the pot is now over $600. Our opponent turns over 7 of diamonds, 5 of diamonds. That's good news. We're a 70% favorite to take the pot, and our opponent closes his eyes knowing he's made a mistake. The turn is the ace of clubs, furthering our hammerlock on the hand, but the jack of diamonds hits the river and we're sent packing. Off to that all-too-familiar long drive home. Well, we got our money in with the best of it, but sometimes the variance just catches up to you. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley, and I hope to see you on the felt.
Okay, after about 6 months on the Antioch PokerCast grid, I think our friend O'Malley here is auditioning for a bigger stage. He's outgrown the Antioch PokerCast. Because, you know, here, in the first few seconds of part two, he says we can't be worried about 7-7 or 3-3. Did I hear that correctly?
I think that's what he said, yeah.
And then he Hollywoods on for nearly 3 more minutes before making the call? I love it! I love it. He probably put his deuces on the table and uncovered one after the second one, you know.
Well,
I mean, he's making a good mystery here, but come on. I mean, once you get to the point, and I'm being all serious now, once you get to the point where you say, I'm not worried about 7-7 or 3-3, if he has him, that's great. Well, what more is there to think about here? I mean, he did all the math, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even the worst possible hand that's not that, we're still a huge favorite over.
Well, the thing is maybe he's listening to our show way too long where we, you know, we go to the hand of the week and we end up changing our mind halfway through the hand. So maybe he put those out of his mind right away, but then thought, man, could he really have 7-7 or 3-3? And then had to think about it. I mean, I don't fault him for thinking a little longer, but yes, I think you're right. I think that the odds of him having that, the one of those two hands, are just rare. And for $48 or whatever it was, I mean, you got to call. So I'm glad I didn't fold. Or even entertain the idea of folding. It's a classic case to me of a player overvaluing his hand and us almost overthinking it in the end. And maybe not even overvaluing, but just not, maybe not, the guy didn't think that we had what we had. And
well,
so,
again, I mean, I think as much as O'Malley is getting beat up on our forum for min-raising here, as he should have, I mean, it's impossible, I should say impossible, it's very unlikely to think that he has deuce-deuce here. Or even a 7-7 or a 3-3. So, I mean, I don't follow our opponent at all. I think he, you know, he played it as well as he could and just got unluckier because we were messing around with pocket deuces.
All aboard! What the hell? You have a train in your backyard? What the hell?
And then bringing in some, you know, the various sundries that we need to run Safety Harbor here.
Oh, my God. I didn't even know the train was that close to your house.
Well, here's the thing. We do not live in Buffalo or Canada or anything like that. So it's February. I have the windows open and the breeze coming. It is, let me check my phone here, a lovely 80 degrees right now.
Yeah. I'm glad Scott does everything he can to bring a quality audio show to the Antioch Nation. Meanwhile, I'm in my bedroom with every door closed, every phone, every window closed, every phone turned off. I'm dying of heat in here because I don't want to put the fan on, and I have the air conditioning turned off, and Scott's sitting outside with the pool running and birds chirping and trains going by.
But I dare you, I challenge you to find me any other poker podcast that has a train running through it this week. No one can ever say that Antiope is not unique.
Hey, we're all about variety. Next week it'll be an 18-wheeler going by blowing its horn.
But back to the hand, you know what I mean, though? I mean,
sure.
We just got lucky here. We were messing around. We were doing something we shouldn't have, and we got the perfect flop, and this guy just got snookered in. This is one of the things, if I'm him, the opponent, I'm just shaking my head. I'm like, how come that can't happen to me? Seriously. So, I mean, I can't fault our opponent at all here. I mean, maybe the Dell is probably a little too much, but I certainly don't think he could have put us on our hands. So
I do think that calling the raise with 7-5, min or not, and then devoting that much money to it with 7-5 was pretty ridiculous too. I don't think that's
that's true.
You know,
but
you know, I mean, all he had was sevens. I could easily see somebody min raising with aces or min raising with anything over sevens or having a better seven like A7 suited.
Right.
You know,
to that point, yeah, you're correct. Yes,
but very interesting. Very interesting hand.
The crowning achievement for any poker player is to put a championship bracelet around their wrist. And the only company that you should trust to create it is Pro Poker Gear. Pro Poker Gear has created custom-designed bracelets and accessories for events from the United States Poker Championships and the WPT APL. Featuring 24/7 service and their exclusive Turbo Builder, Pro Poker Gear will supply your poker event with an award everyone will be talking about. Visit ProPokerGear.com and get geared.
Joining us today is Mark Hoke, programming director for Short Stack Radio, which has quickly made a name for itself in the poker world with tons of poker programming that attracts the who's who of the poker world as its guest, including yours truly, every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. He's chatting with us today from Buffalo, New York, where Short Stack Radio will be broadcasting from the inaugural Deep Stacks Poker Tour event at Seneca Niagara. Mark, you got to tell me, did you remember to pack a shovel and parka?
I did not. I am not afraid of the cold up here, but actually, we're kind of lucky right now. It's been pretty nice up here. It's, you know, it's still in the mid to high 30s, but I do hear rumor of a snowstorm. So fortunately, I'm in a casino, so you know, don't really have to worry about going outside too much. I think we're gonna be all right.
All right. I think you broke up there for a little bit because you said it's not too bad, and then you also said it's in the high 30s.
Look, you know, some of us, Scott, don't catch a cold when we go outside and it's 55 degrees.
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, when I put together my top 10 list of places I want to be in February, Buffalo is 1 through 5.
Really? It's wonderful up here. It's wonderful. I'm right here in Niagara Falls. You know, I can see the lake. It's absolutely beautiful up here, actually. It's, you know, it's a little gray. You know, and like I said, I think there's a little bit of bad weather coming, but great place to be. I mean, I think you'd be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, tell us that when it's August and there's still snow piles in the parking lots. Because that's what happened the year I moved here. The year I moved here, they had so much snow, when they piled it all up in the parking lots, in August, the snow was still there. So good luck with that, big guy.
Hey, Phil. I love Buffalo.
I don't think you're a all good.
Yeah, I love Buffalo. Fast and I had a good trip up there. It's a good poker, lots of fun. Have you picked out your barrel yet to go over the falls in?
No, I'm picking out who I'm putting in the barrel to go over the falls.
Very good.
Right, be sure you have all these deep.
Suit, so. Yeah, we got all those Deep Stacks guys flying around, and we've got one of my co-hosts, Mark Castronova, here, and I'm thinking I might push him over. it might be some good publicity for the show.
Hey, if I get Scott on the red eye to go up there, would you do that for me?
Yeah.
Well, why don't you start us off by telling us what kind of coverage you guys have in store for this weekend's event?
Well, we are covering the event all weekend long. We are going to start with the main event here on Friday. We're going to be on starting at 11 a.m. We're going to go, and we're going to do split shows for the first 2 days. We're going to go from 11 to 3 and then 8 to midnight tomorrow. Saturday, we're going to be on from 1:30 to 5, and then we're going to come back on at 8. And we're going to stay until they get down to the final table. So, you know, hopefully the big guys are going to knock some people out and clean this up pretty quick. And then Sunday we'll be on at 1 o'clock, and we will be covering the final table. It's going to be a televised event. Should be an amazing time, and you know, we're going to be here for the whole thing.
Very cool.
Excellent. It's probably a good time, as any, to mention where folks can actually listen to this great coverage at.
Well, you can go to, of course, the website, shortstackradio.com. You can also catch us on Ustream. We're also a Facebook application. I mean, we're pretty much everywhere. I mean, it's weird, but it's kind of hard not to find us anymore. You can look us up on Facebook. You can look us up on Ustream, on Shortstack Radio, or just go to the website, whichever one you want to do.
Excellent. Well, when you made first contact with us a couple of years ago now, I think, you were working on your fledgling Hoax House television show there in Pennsylvania. Since then, you briefly served as Annie Up's Eastern Pennsylvania ambassador, and now you're growing Shortstack Radio each and every week. It's getting bigger and bigger. So tell us a little bit about this ride you've been on the last couple of years.
Jesus. It has been crazy. You know, we're still going to be working on the TV show once we... We have a second phase of development we're going to be doing that we're going to incorporate that. So the TV table's ready to go. I can't wait to fire that thing up. But in terms of it, you know, the rest of everything we've been doing, I mean, it's just been unbelievable. We have grown so quickly, and you know, and I really have the poker community to thank for that, and a great team that we've had behind us. You know, our hosts, with JJ Corrado and Mark Castronova and Eric Townsend. Jonathan Bratz, Craig Felder, and then we have great people on, like Scott and Kevin Mathers joined the segment this every week. Chad Holloway from Poker News, Rich Muni from the PPA. I mean, it's been so exciting, and and we've been very fortunate that we built a good reputation right off the bat, and so many of the great players in the game have come on the show. It was funny. I got recognized today when I came to or yesterday when I came to the hotel. And I just stood there for a second, how did this happen? And it's been so exciting, and but a lot of it is, I think we've just got a lot of great people that have been working with us on the show, and just kind of keeping me afloat, and I'm doing the best that I can. I mean, it's just been incredible, to go from sitting in an apartment doing a little show and having a couple of guests on. To covering the Deep Stacks Poker Tours event, covering the Epic Poker League, and we're getting ready to do some World Series coverage this year, and I still am in shock when I think about it.
Well, I tell you, that list of people you were rattling off got so long, I was about to tell the conductor to cue the band for the acceptance speech there. Get you off stage there for a minute. That was a pretty long list, pretty impressive.
Yeah, and of course, then we have Ty Warren out there who does the website work and everything too. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention him. I got to get everybody in, but I think it's part of the appeal of the show is that we, we're not the kind of people that are, I'm this big time poker player and I'm going to show off and and so on. It's more of a show for fans, and it's more a show for people to want to get to know the players. And I have a WSOP circuit cash, but otherwise, what have I done in the game? Nothing. So,
right.
and to have people listening to me and the rest of the team on the show, I really think it presents the everyman's approach to what would they do if they got to talk to Phil Hellmuth? What would they do if they got to talk to Jerry Yang? And it's just been amazing. We really love doing the show, and we appreciate all the listeners out there.
Well, speaking of the listeners, then what will they hear when they tune in to Short Stacked?
Well, what won't they hear sometimes is the question. on Tuesdays we do we have a couple steady segments that we do. We have Chad Holloway on from Poker News, and we have Rich Muni from the PPA, and then we fill in with other guests. Whoever we can get. Tuesday night's usually a night where we'll play a game like the match game or something like that, so we have a little fun with that. Wednesday night we do our segments with Scott. We have the Grindettes and an amazing group of women's poker players. And that's something that we've tried to do is, also to bring a focus to the women's poker community. I think it's something that's really lacking, and I think I was very fortunate to meet the Grindettes and get them involved. I mean, it's Katie Stone, Katie Dozier, Jennifer Shahade, and Jamie Kerstetter. I mean, just four amazing players and amazing people. And to get them on the show was unreal. And then Kevin Mathers does his show on Wednesday, or his segment on Wednesday night. And then Friday night, we have a couple guests on, and we also do a little poker tournament where we give away all sorts of prizes. And everybody's just loving that because they get a chance to play against professional players. And it's just been it's a lot of fun. We just try to you know, chat it up, have a good time, and, you know, of course we get into some conversations where, you know, I get insulted and some of the other co-hosts get insulted, and we have fun with it, and it's just a great time for everybody, so.
Well, you mentioned Chad Holloway, which is Annie Up's Wisconsin ambassador, in addition to all the great work he does at Poker News. But another one of our ambassadors, our Atlantic City ambassador, Chris Belk, which hosts a show on Thursday nights, right?
Yep. We have our other show that we do on there, the Griffin Belke Show, which is hosted by Jeff Griffith and Chris Belkowich, Thursday nights at 8. And those are all Eastern times, by the way. But Griffin Belke do a really fun show, too. I mean, they actually incorporate some MMA stuff into the poker as well, because they're big MMA fans. And it kind of mixes it up a little bit, too. I mean, those guys are fun. And I just really enjoy having them being a part of Short Stack Radio, too.
Well, you know, you talked a lot about the guys who produce the shows for you, but... And then now you talk about the Grindettes as well. I know you have a pretty impressive list of people who have actually been on the show, especially considering how, you know, how short the show has been around. Other than, you know, Scott Long, obviously, who's been your favorite guest on there?
You know, I when I was thinking about that question, it's so hard to say, because in terms of, you know, there's like different, like Jerry Yang is probably, in terms of an individual, is the most impressive person that I've gotten to talk to on air, just because of all the charity that he does and the things that he has accomplished outside of poker. I mean, I get on, when I interview him, I feel like a flea. I mean, the guy is just amazing. You know, in terms of people with business sense, you know, the Maven, David Chakotsky, is one of the most impressive people I've ever spoken to. I love having David on the show. Having Phil Hellmuth on the show was incredible, and Daniel Negreanu. You know, a lot of the Deep Stacks guys have been outstanding too. You know, you have the guys like the Grinder and Adam Levy. I mean, Adam's a lot of fun to have on the show. I mean, I could probably go on and on. Those are just some of the names that, you know, come to me at the top of my mind. So
sounds like Jerry Yang's your favorite, though.
You know, I'll tell you what, if I get to hang out with Jerry Yang every day, I would. And honestly, and you know, it's not just because he won the main event, it's because of who he is. He is who he appears to be, and then so much more. I mean, he was telling me a story on the show where he helps out about 30 disadvantaged kids, and the guy runs a restaurant, which is absolutely a time killer. He plays poker. He does all these speaking engagements, charity appearances, and he's helping 30 kids. Yeah. I mean, he should be seeing Yang. Yeah.
Well,
he's an incredible person, and I have a standing invite to go to his restaurant, and I'm very much looking forward to taking advantage of that.
Well, here's another tip for you too. When you're out doing World Series coverage, walk next door to the Gold Coast and have the buffet there. You're sure to see him sit next to you.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Now, certainly, we've had our share of pros on any podcast, and I know one of the challenges we had. You mentioned how great it was to chat with Jerry Yang, but every once in a while we've had some pros where you just have to kind of pull the information out. They're real painful interviews. I'm not asking you to name names, but how difficult is it for you to come up with fresh questions for these pros, and do you find yourself sometimes in these situations where you're firing everything you have at them and you're just not getting anything out of them?
I've had a couple interviews, and like I said, I won't say any names because they're both great guys, but I got yes and no answers, and you know, I don't want to talk about how I'm playing right now, and it's like, okay, well, let's see, and you know, and you just sit there and you're like, okay, what else did I have? You're digging and digging. But one thing that I've really tried to do before the players come on the show is I do as much research as I can, because if I'm not as familiar with them as maybe I'd like to be, you know, I try to find out, you know, some personal information too. And that's something that I try to incorporate in all the interviews that I do, is to ask them questions about their lives and about, you know, what they do outside of poker, because, you know, you could sit there and talk about poker all day, but part of what I've molded the show into doing is, you know, I like to treat it like the Tonight Show was, you know, where people would come on, yeah, you talk about your movie or you talk about whatever you're doing, but you get to know the person too. You know, when you run into situations like that, I think that preparation is key to doing a good interview. So then if you do run into a situation where, you know, somebody's you don't get the wind up and go kind of interview, that you're at least prepared to have things ready so that you don't run into a big hole.
You know, like Scott had mentioned, we had always interviewed pros for years, and I always prided myself in trying to find out as much information like you do. And I thought it was funny earlier this year, Scott and I were talking, I was saying maybe we should go into one interview where we just pretend like we absolutely know nothing about poker and like ask them like all the basic questions like, how excited do you get when you make a straight? And can you tell me what a straight is? You know, things like that. So I would like, if you wanted to be the guinea pig for us, want to try that with somebody and see how it goes over, let us know, because I'd love to tune into that episode.
You know what? I may give that a shot. I think I know some people I could get away with on that.
I mean, it just sounds like if you had Helmuth on the show with his ego and you pretend like you never even heard of him and you're like, so Phil Helmuth Jr., it says Jr. here, is your dad a poker player? You know what I mean? Or, you know, just some weird questions. I thought that would be a lot of fun.
Well, you know, and I'm going to say this about Phil, too. One thing about Phil, the first time that I had him on the show, and you can imagine that, you know, here I am. I've never personally met Phil. And we get the interview lined up, and I was probably more nervous for that interview than anyone that I've done. And the first thing we started talking about was scotch.
Awesome.
and you know, it just slides right into a conversation. And one thing about Phil that I think that he probably wouldn't want everybody to know this, but you know, some of that stuff that he does on TV, you know, it's an act, it's marketing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
when you really get to talk to him, he is one of the nicest guys you're ever going to meet. I mean, you know, if you don't treat him well, I'm sure, you know, he'll bite you. But Phil was turned out to be one of the easiest interviews I ever had. And, you know, he's just a great guy. And, you know, I hate to ruin the package there for Phil, but Phil, you are a nice guy.
Well, you had a coup of sorts having Barry Greenstein scheduled for your show the day after his 2+2 post about the money he owes on Full Tilt. How did that chat go?
Very interesting. It was one of those interviews where, you know, I like to call them a wind them up and go interview. You just kind of lay the question out there and just let them say what they need to say. You know, Barry was a guy that I have tremendous respect for. And, you know, we talked about the Hall of Fame and everything. And then when I brought the question up, Barry really went off. and I don't blame him. I mean, you know, here's a guy that has one of the most impeccable reputations in poker, and all of a sudden the story comes out. And, you know, the guy is very smart. He knows he's got an image to protect. And when he answered the questions about it, I personally was satisfied with what he said. You know, there may be some other people out there that say, well, you should just give the money back. But you know, there was a lot more to the story than that, and we were very fortunate to get to talk to Barry right after that happened. You know, because I think it was a good opportunity for him to get it off his chest. And, you know, he knows we have a lot of people listening to the show. And, you know, so it gave him a good opportunity. And, it's hard asking questions like that. You hate to do it. And, you know, you kind of try to give these guys a little heads up, hey, just to let you know, I am going to ask about this. You know, because it really, I wouldn't be doing the listeners the service if I didn't ask. I mean, they would be saying, well, why didn't you ask Barry about that? That's the biggest thing going on.
Right.
So, you know, I had to approach it. It was a little scary to ask the question, but a lot of times I have found that if you are really careful and word questions the right way, people will answer them well. I mean, I've had Andy Duke on the show, for example, and Andy, you know, fun to talk to, but don't ask a question the wrong way. You have to be really careful.
Scott
and,
did that.
You know, you know, and
guilty.
If I had asked Barry Greenstone, so Barry, why didn't you pay back that $400,000? Do you think he'd still been on the phone? No. You know, you have to treat it like it's a personal conversation when you do these interviews and when you're in those tough spots like that. Because if you don't, you're going to sound judgmental. When I do an interview, I don't want to be the judge and jury. That's up to everybody else to decide. I'm just going to try to give these guys like Barry the chance to come out and answer the question the way they want to answer it, and let everybody else say what they want to say. And we discuss it and go from there. So, but it was fun.
I'm sure that your the back of your cell phone could probably fry an egg on it right now. So we're not going to keep you for too much longer. But what are some plans for the future of Short Stacked Radio? You guys got anything that you're working on right now?
We do. I don't want to get into it too much, though, but I, you know, the one thing that I will say is that we do have some serious improvements and things that we want to make a push on. Because I think that if you stay in one place too long, it's going to get stale. And I honestly would love to do this for 20 years. I love doing the show. So I want to keep trying to find some fresh ways, you know, with myself and the rest of the team to make the show better. We've got some great ideas, and, you know, it's just a matter of doing it at the right time. You know, maybe a location change, because, you know, York, Pennsylvania is not exactly the poker mecca of the world, to say the least. So, I mean, if you're going to do a poker show, I will say this, if you're going to do a poker show, you might as well, think about going out to Sin City and doing it. That would seem to make sense, don't you think?
It must be rough.
All right, Mark, we certainly appreciate you being on the show. I definitely appreciate you having me on your show every week. And folks, remember to go to shortstackradio.com, listen on their Facebook page, Ustream, wherever else they find a place to let you listen. Really good stuff. Mark, have a great time up there in Buffalo. I'm glad the snow hasn't come yet. And tell our good friend Chris Trina and all the Deep Stacks pros that we're excited for them to have a good event.
Hey, I will do that. And gentlemen, I want to thank you for letting me come on the show. To me, it's a privilege. I know the Antioch podcast is one of the best ones out there, and I'm honored to have a chance to be on it. So thank you for the time, guys. Enjoy Florida. I'll be thinking of you up here in upstate New York.
Thanks, Mark. Stay warm.
All right. Take care, gentlemen.
Bye-bye.
This is Joe Navarro, and you're listening to the best poker cast in all the universe, Ante Up, the absolute best on poker.
Once again from jolly old England is our handle, Lake.
Wow.
Do they still call themselves England over there?
I don't know.
See, I never understood this. United Kingdom, what the difference between United Kingdom and England was.
Oh, don't even say that on the show.
Well, I don't. I mean, somebody's going to correct me here. So,
well, because United Kingdom incorporates like Wales and all that stuff, and England is its own country.
So, do you say I'm from the UK, or do you say you're from England?
Well, you're both. I mean, it's like saying, are you from America or are you from the United States? I mean,
that's what I'm asking. Should I say this guy's a Rod or Hand of the Week? This guy's from London. So,
hey, that's what you say. So he's from London. So let's just leave it at that. Don't embarrass us anymore.
Even better. All right, it's Rod from London. You can extrapolate from there. What else would I say? I just started listening to our podcast, and he's enjoying it very much. Probably he's no longer listening now. He said our hand the week two broadcasts ago with the Queen of Diamonds, Two of Diamonds, prompted me to register on a forum and post my thoughts.
Yes, yes.
He goes by Azurius on the forum.
And he's actually sparked a lot of people to start posting again, so I'm glad he's there.
Absolutely. Very, very intelligent player. All right, so anyway, I have a juicy hand that I played a while back that I found interesting to analyze. Analyze with an S. I love my English people. It is a divided opinion of my circle of poker-playing buddies. I thought it might be interesting for you guys to discuss on the show. We agree.
Well, absolutely.
Agree. Chris will agree later on. Takes place in a poker club in London, not a casino. Poker club.
Okay.
And it's a £1, £2 no-limit hold'em cash game.
That's like 10-20 over here, isn't it?
Yeah. Our currency sucks ass.
Yeah, we are a slow dollar, ladies and gentlemen.
Right, absolutely. So 1-2, and in Macau, that's probably 500, 700. So £1, £2, or 1-2. We'll keep it simple for us ugly Americans here that don't know pounds. Game is loose and deep, and our hero started with £200 and has built a stack up to around 500 over a 4-hour period.
Very good.
Yeah, he built it up. So the hand in question starts with an early position limper, and then the guy on his right raises to 12. So this is a fairly standard opening raise, particularly with a limper, so it doesn't tell him much. However, the guy who opened had only made one pre-flop raise in the previous 4 hours. And whenever he had been the post-flop aggressor, he always showed up with a big hand. So he's a bit of a rock, and I haven't seen him bluff at all.
All right, so this is the guy who limped.
Yes.
Yeah, so the guy who limped, and the only time he ever raised in 4 hours was when he had a big hand, right?
No, I think this is the guy on the right, right?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking you, because I'm getting confused by the reading. What did you say again?
It says the guy who opened.
All right, so not the guy who limped, but the guy who opened. All right, so the guy who opened raises. So he always has a big hand when he showed it down. All right. And he was a post-flop aggressor. He always showed up with a big hand, you said. So,
all right, good.
Okay. All right, so we're clear. So we have a limper and then a guy who's really tight raising.
Right.
On our right. Okay.
And we're on the button with pocket sevens.
Okay, I like calling here. We have a hand that can crack, a big hand. We're in position so we can control what happens. We're last to bet. And I don't think we should fold because 12 is reasonable, and I don't think we should raise because we only have sevens. This guy's a rock, so we know he's probably got a pretty big hand here. So I like a call.
I like to call, and then I hope I flop a set, but it's not the highest set, and then I'll spend 5 hours talking about why we should maybe not call. That's what I'm planning on doing. All right, so we all agree we call. Big blind calls, the limper calls as well, too, so that makes it three of us.
Three or four? Four-handed.
Four-handed, making the pot 49 pounds.
Okay.
Again, that's currency, not actual weight.
Although we don't know. The chips could weigh a pound each. Who knows?
Shillings and stuff, right? Yeah. All right. Four of us see a flop of ace of diamonds, queen of diamonds, seven of diamonds.
Hmm.
So our hero says, I flopped a set on an ace high board, and I have position. That's what I call a plan coming together.
Oh.
Yeah, there are a lot of diamonds out there, but I'm still loving this flop. I'm loving it.
Well.
Let me tell you, the action checks the razor. He bets 21 into the 49 pot, and it's on us now.
The thing about, for me to love something, I have to know that, I mean, let's just say it came 7-7 deuce.
About 7-7-7?
Well, then you're in trouble. But if it came 7-7 deuce, I would love that. Because there's nothing more superfluous than love, right? I mean, what more could you say? You know, for me to love this flop, I would want there to not be two cards more than mine from a rock who raises for the first time, only when he does raise. And the other thing is three diamonds. I don't love being four-handed with three diamonds on the board with my set.
This is the best smitten, right?
Yeah, I think I'm happy, smitten maybe, but love is a little strong for me here. So, and when he says a plan coming together, that's not what I would have planned. I would have planned for ace, you know, not even an ace, maybe seven.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're right. I immediately saw the diamonds, which normally you're not supposed to worry about, but that's the first thing I know. I didn't even think about it, but you're right. If this guy's a rock, aces and queens, I don't want to see those.
Yeah.
Those are two possible hands he has.
Tough. But again, not being results-oriented, going with the odds of people flopping a set at the same time you flop a set and the rarity of it, you're going to have to say that you're probably ahead here. He probably doesn't have aces, probably doesn't have queens, but it is a possibility. So it has to be in the back of your mind when the hand plays out. So he bet 20, 21 into 49. So he bet a little less than half, which is not really a... He did say he was an aggressor after the flop and showed down big hands. So
when he was, yeah.
Right?
He was. Yeah.
So this doesn't seem very aggressive.
Post-flop aggressor, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, so to me, if he's not, that isn't very, to me, it's not a very aggressive bet. That's almost a timid bet.
Yeah, it's a little less than half.
Little less than half. When normally we bet 2/3 the pot when we're representing strength or showing strength or have strength, at least, right?
Of course, if you're a rock, though, I mean, this is, this to me kind of screams a value bet here. It's a, hey, I want to reel you in. I flop my set.
Well, let me ask you this. If you did indeed...
Whereas if it was a drier board where... Let's say he has pocket aces and there wasn't an ace on the board, then I think you'd probably make that bigger bet that you're talking about.
Okay, well, let me... You and I talked about being afraid of aces and queens.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just imagine he has one of those hands.
Right.
Is this guy really going to bet 21 into a bet of 49 knowing there are three diamonds out there? And that his set of whatever could be beaten on the next card if he doesn't get the draws out of four-handed play?
I think he might.
I don't think he would. I think he would bet more. I think the only time he would bet something like that was when he knew he had the nut flush draw with a pair like ace-king, and the king is a diamond.
He's betting a little bit and hoping for a raise here so he can re-raise, too.
Yeah, but, I mean, the last thing you want, flush draw, you know, I mean, the last thing you want to do is have a flush draw get there on such a cheap price when, I mean, it's so obvious. You have four people in the same
hand. We have a set here. I'm a little less worried about that fourth diamond hitting.
I know, but I'm not going to do it for a cheap price either. I want
to
get...
Well, I don't think 21 is cheap. It's probably cheaper than you would like to charge. But
well,
it's not
less,
like you bet
less than half.
10.
Less than half the pot, to
me,
is cheap.
A lot of people will make a half pot bet. I mean, half would be 24?
So yeah, really 24, 25. Yeah.
I don't think it's that terrible. I mean, you're right. I would bet more, but I don't think it's...
if it's a dry board, if it's ace, queen, deuce, three suits, yeah, 21, it sounds like you want to get paid off. When it's three diamonds and two to Broadway, and people who call raises tend to have Broadway cards in their hand, I like to think that I'm going to bet a little more than less than half the pot to protect my hand. So I just don't think he's being that aggressive, since he said he was aggressive with big hands. Okay. So I'm just saying, I don't think right now, I don't think that's a good bet. I think that I'm going to raise here.
Okay.
Normally I would raise here, so I think I would raise to like 60.
Well, I think I'm definitely raising here.
Okay.
Because I mean, if he re-raises me, then I know he's got to have aces or queens, right? If he's a rock, right?
Probably, unless he has, like I said, he has ace king with the king of diamonds, he might re-raise because he thinks he's got a great, great hand and a redraw if he's wrong.
Yeah, okay. I got it.
So.
I forgot about the king of diamonds possibly being ace king. That's really the only other hand.
Yeah, it's like three hands that you're afraid of.
He's not playing jack 10 of diamonds, so.
Right, because of the nature of how he plays.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm definitely raising. Again, I've got a set here. I mean, there's things I'm worried about, but I've got a set. I'm getting some money in here, and like I said, the rock re-raises me. I don't think this guy's going to re-raise me with ace, with the king of diamonds. I can't see that happening. I think he would call my raise
maybe,
at that point.
Maybe.
Which doesn't help me too much, but...
And we have other people in the hand. There could be somebody with the king of diamonds in their hand with another, like a king-queen... With the king of diamonds,
absolutely.
Or a king jack with a Broadway and flush draw.
Yeah, I want to destroy the flush draws here.
Yeah,
I'm
so
destroying, but I mean, I want them to overpay for them.
Which is why I'm thinking that the initial bettor would be thinking that way if he had a set or one of those hands. So that's why I don't think he really has a quality hand right now. I think something happened, like maybe he has jacks or something. You know, I just don't feel like that was a confident bet there. That's just how I feel. All right, so he bet 21. I would have raised to like 60. What would you have raised to?
Yeah, three times that. That's good. I like that.
Okay. What does he do?
60. Yeah, I'm trying to think about this because we have two more people. Yeah, probably 60. All right. Now, our hero says I could raise for value here and very often would. Probably 60, 70% of the time he would. But on this occasion, chose just the flat call. The big blind calls and the fourth player folds. So we're three-handed with a pot of 112.
Well, I mean, it's not what we want because we don't want another hand in there with us on top of it. You know, now we've got three hands.
See, the big blind now is priced in on... He's getting the right price for his flush, right?
I think so. That's plenty of money
like
to call.
4-1 almost.
Which is another reason why, one, the first guy should have bet more, and two, we should have raised. And I realize he said that more times than not he would raise. But I would have to get a pretty strong indication that the blind that checked and the fourth player would fold for me to just call there. And it turns out that didn't happen. The blind who checked did call, and the other guy folded. So I hate being three-handed with three diamonds and two overs. You know, I just hate it. There are so many draws there now when you think about it, diamonds and Broadway, that we're going to have to probably count on one of our 10 outs and hope it's the 7 if it comes. but I don't agree with that. I mean, I guess there's certain, you know, people always talk about mixing up your play, and you know, I've done a lot of reading lately on like Twitter, people talking about their hands and stuff, and a lot of guys are saying, you know, just because you are supposed to mix up your play doesn't mean that you should always mix up your play. Here, the best play seems to be a raise to me. I could be wrong, but it seems to be the best play to me. And now it seems to have backfired because you got a third player in, and I don't know if you want that in this situation.
Right.
Hmm.
Okay. Once again, pot's 112, but it's three-handed now. The turn is the queen of spades. So the board now is ace of diamonds, queen of diamonds, seven of diamonds, queen of spades. We obviously have the underboat.
Mm.
And now the big blind leads out for 21. The preflop raiser raises to 56. Now, before he answers, he says the guy in the big blind is a good player, knows what he's doing, but my read was this was a weak lead here and doesn't look like a big hand. But he said, but the raise, even though it's small relative to the pot size, is very strong in my opinion. Having played with this guy all night, I was close to 100% certain he wouldn't make this raise with ace-king given that turn card, even if he held the king of diamonds. After his 56 goes in, he has about 185 behind, and we have him well covered.
God. I don't know if I can fold a full house here. I mean, I have to really put these guys on exactly ace-ace, ace-queen, or queen-queen. And I don't think somebody with queen-queen is raising or betting out. I don't think anyone with ace-queen is raising or betting out. I think that they would check.
What about the big blind? I think an ace-queen is a legitimate holding for him, right?
Right, but if he has ace-queen, it's less likely someone else has aces. So maybe he just checks and lets them continue to do the betting and calling and then raise. Why would you bet out now? Seems weak to me. You've got guys who are showing strength who are betting out when you check to them. Why would you now? And you look like you're flush drawing. So if you have a flush draw, you wouldn't bet out. And if you miss the flush draw, you would check.
Yeah, so you're trying to get that river flush for cheap at your price, right?
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is you're trying to get them to bet, you know, and then you could just call, or if you really believe the guy has, like, pocket sevens.
I'm saying if you have the flush draw here, not the queen.
Oh, right,
21,
right.
That 21 is a bet where you're trying to control the edge.
Yeah, it just seems fishy to me. I don't like his, but the raise is almost 3x.
I'm not convinced I want to see my diamond now with the paired board.
Paired board, yeah. See, I just feel like that's a weird play. I don't think this guy's strong. The other guy might be strong, but he might just have a queen in his hand. The question is, what queen is it? Queen, king of diamonds is the only hand that we beat right now. If it's aces or pocket queens, I said, I don't think would raise here. So, if the guy has pocket aces, I think he might just call too. God, that's tough. There's no way he has ace.
I might. I mean, if I'm the preflop raiser and I had queens... all right, so I'm betting the 21, which is kind of a fishy bet with my set, but I'm excited about it. That makes sense. And now I've got a guy that just wakes up out of nowhere and bets a piddly 21.
Yeah,
I'm going to want to try to get some value here, right? So I'm going to raise even on my quads.
I don't think I'm raising the quads.
He's probably at least going to call. He might raise if he doesn't believe me, but I'm not going to pass up this amount of money, this value money here on this turn, just because I got quads and I'm scared about losing them.
I'd have to disagree.
Plus, I got the other guy behind me that's been calling along as well too.
No,
so
I have to disagree with raising here. If I had quads, I mean, I would disagree with that, because one, this guy, you have position on this guy who chose to bet out. So one, you have another whole street where he could hang himself. Two, you got somebody behind you. If you raise, you might lose that guy, but if you call 21, you might get 21 out of him. I think if you raise with the absolute positive stone cold nuts, you have there's no upside to that, unless the guy thinks he has, you know, he has pocket aces or something.
I'm not going to argue with you what you should do, but I think it's wrong to say there's no upside. I mean, all right, if we just call a 21 and then we get the button to stick around, which is what you're saying,
right?
We picked up another 21 bucks in the pot,
right?
We raised to 56 as we did here, and the button folds, but we get the big blind to call the other 35. We've made more money. And then the big blind just checks on the river, then we've made more money than we are by trying to loop the other guy in.
Well, the other thing, though, is that, one, you're assuming the big blind's going to call. If it was a move he was making, like we're all putting him on a move here, and then it's not a quality hand, when you raise, he's not going to call.
Yeah, I'm not buying the fact that this 21's a move. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, what, you're just going to sacrifice 21 bucks here? I mean, what are you trying to accomplish with that bet?
Well, I mean, I think
other than just to give everybody a call and get a cheap look at the flush, which doesn't make any sense to me either. I don't really have any idea what this big blind's doing. Well, of course, we're assuming this other guy has quads, which we're off track a little bit too. But
no, I'm just saying, if he has quads, if our initial raiser has quads, I think a raise here could scare two people out, and you only win 21. Whereas if you call, you win 21 more if the guy calls behind you, and if not, you have another chance for this guy to bluff on the end for you, or if he makes his flush on the end, if he is a flush draw and he was making a defensive bet, now he may bet into you or call whatever you bet. So I just feel like a raise of quads is not good.
Right. The fact that this tight rock described guy has been betting all the way and now raises when somebody leads into him, that has to be strength, right?
Yeah, I think the rock probably has a decent hand.
All right, now that's strength. What does he have that we can beat?
Well, again, the only hand I think we can beat is king queen if he has strength, because he has three queens, and that would be a hand that he would probably raise with preflop.
That's the only hand, though, right?
Yeah, I think that's the only hand. If, you know, I mean, if unless he's just totally not as good as we think he is, and he has like jack-jack, and he doesn't believe anybody, or, you know, or something with the king of diamonds in his hand, king-jack or something. But other than that, no, I don't think he would play it that way. So probably king-queen with the king of diamonds in his hand.
All right, so I guess my question now is, it's $56 to us, and there's only one hand that we think that he legitimately has that we can beat. Is this not an easy fold, though?
No, I mean, I don't know if I can fold here, but...
Well, I know you can't fold. I mean, it's a tough fold to make, but that's what I'm honestly saying. I mean, this guy is tight.
Mm-hmm.
He's been betting all the way. Now the big blind, out of nowhere, bets 21, and he continues, and it's a pretty weak raise, too. I mean, with the pot as big as it is. I got to think he's got aces, queens, or ace-queen. All three of us have us crushed, right?
Yeah.
He can't have seven. I guess he could have a queen seven, but that has his beat. Right?
Yeah.
I just can't think of another hand that this guy is actually doing this with. And he's really tight. I can't see him raising preflop with king-queen. That's not a hand that you raise with if you're a rock.
Maybe,
and well, certainly not a hand that you bet $21 on the flop when there's an ace out there.
Well, the other thing, too, is that just because Rod tells us this guy's a rock and showed down a big hand the one time he did or whatever doesn't necessarily mean that he wasn't raising with king-queen before. You know what I mean? I don't want to dismiss that hand.
I'm just
but
going off of the...
It could be ace-king, too, though.
That's correct.
It could still be ace-king. He could still overvalue his ace king with aces and a king of diamonds. It could be that hand.
When somebody wakes up surprisingly on turn.
Who woke up surprisingly on the
blind
turn?
The big blind's just been hanging.
No, I'm talking about the preflop raise of the hand we beat. The preflop raise with ace king. We were talking about what hand he could have.
right, but that's what I'm saying. Though. Yeah. I mean, he's not going to raise with ace king now when this big blind leads out for 21.
Well, I said, I don't know if this guy overvalues his hand. It could be aces and queens with a king kicker and the nut flush draw in case nobody's got... Because the big blind, if he doesn't believe the big blind like no one else does, that's a piddly bet. If you don't think this guy has a full house, then your ace king is still probably good.
If I don't believe him, though, I'm going to fall into the trap and just call because it's confusing me.
Yeah.
Which is probably what the big blind's trying to do, and I'm willing to go along with it because I don't want to be in a situation where I get raised off of his hand by somebody with crap.
Well, I think I'm just calling as Rod here because in case there is that hand, I'm trying to keep the pot as small as possible and see what the big blind does.
56 pounds, which again is $400. When really, you think there's only two possible hands that this guy has that you could beat. And and you're drawing dead other than the seven. I guess you get one out.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, if he has queen-queen, I don't have an out.
True. Yeah. But I mean, at best, you have one out. That to me, I mean, maybe I'm too tight. Maybe I'm, maybe I'm throwing away something here. But to me, this is where I'm adding stuff up and going, if I'm wrong, that's fine. By folding, I'd rather be wrong by folding than throwing another 56 in here. And then what do you do on what card's going to come on the river?
Yeah.
Other than a 7 that you're going to be really excited about. After that, there's probably going to be another round of betting. So you're not just putting 56 in here. You're putting more than that.
Well, one of the things that is encouraging is that he only bet 21 on the first on the flop and then 56 for a raise. So maybe this guy isn't going to bet that much. And to me, it might be worth it to see what this guy shows down if he bets another 60.
And you might be able to see that for free.
Oh, yeah, you mean because if I... Yeah, I just feel like this big blind...
I mean, I really don't see the big blind folding here. So, I mean, if that's what you're thinking, then I think there's... I mean, unless somebody else paid it for all of us to see the hand. I don't feel like I need to be the hero and pay $56 plus.
I just don't think we're going to see the hand unless the big blind's hand gets there. I think he's drawing. I just don't feel like this big blind
okay, but
is going
to
you're
going to put 56 in plus whatever the riverbed is, and then what he said he had... he's got 185 behind left after his 56-hour bet. Could be expensive card for us to see on the river.
Yeah, I'm just not folding. The other thing, too, is I just don't know. Just because Rod told us this guy was super tight doesn't necessarily mean it has to be aces or queens or ace-queen. You know, it could be kings or the king of diamonds. How the hell do we know? There are a lot of hands that could beat us, that we could beat still. Not a lot, but there are hands that would still make sense with this betting.
Well, yeah.
King, king.
I think we have to give some credence to how he's describing this player, though.
Well, king, king could be a hand that he'd play this way.
With an ace on board and now pocket queens and somebody betting out?
With the king of diamonds?
It's not the kind of rocks that I play with.
Well, the king of diamonds and kings, and he bet 21.
I don't think worry about the flush draws. Or think about the flush draws.
Yeah. I don't know.
Alright, all I'm saying, I'm worried here. And I don't see any reason for me to put more in. I only put the 21 on the, right?
Well, before I said I can't fold, and you said, "Yeah, I'm not folding." Or you said something you can't see.
All right,
folding,
well,
so.
I thought about it more now, and I don't see any way I can call this.
Okay, I can call. I'm just gonna call.
All right. So our hero says I could raise here, but doing so would look super strong. Would probably drive out hands that I want value from, and if I'm behind, I could get all in, drawing almost dead. In other words, it's a way ahead, way behind spot. So I just flat called 56. And after a brief time, the big blind folds.
Hmm.
So I guess we're right. He was trying to get to the river at his price, and it didn't work out.
Yeah, I had a feeling that big blind bet just was so fishy. That was like a six of the pot. Okay, well, we just call. Now we got to hope that, you know, the bet's not too big on the river, and we can make a decision.
All right, the river is a 10 of diamonds. So our final board is ace of diamonds, queen of diamonds, seven of diamonds, queen of spades, ten of diamonds. So the flush gets there. Some straights, whether it really matters, get there. And the villain then quickly shoves for his last 185.
Well, of course that was coming, because we only called and... All right, so the royal flush got there. The flush got there, which isn't consequential, but maybe he thinks if he had the king of diamonds in his hand that it's good. And he's not putting us on. Maybe he's putting us on, like, ace-king or something. Or even a lone queen, like king-queen with no diamonds. Jeez. Man, this is tough.
This is tough? I really don't think this is tough now. I'm not calling 185 here.
Oh, man.
I mean, it is... It's weird that he's bet 21, raised to 56, and now all of a sudden 185. I'll give you that. But that's a lot of money for me to... I got to have a lot of hubris. Hubris?
Hubris.
Here to be able to 185, hoping that my boat's good in the face of all this. I think this guy sees us not going away at all, and we'll call whatever.
All right.
But again, I would have folded on the turn. I wouldn't want to be... this is a tougher situation than the turn now.
All right. I think mathematically, we have to fold. I think mathematically, there aren't enough hands that we beat that will give us the right odds to make this call. I think that there are enough hands that beat us, given what we know about the guy, given the combinations that could beat us. All right, well, I guess I'm folding. It's killing me to fold. It's an underbow. If it was Omaha, I'd had the cards in the muck before the hand even started. But because it's Hold'em, it's so tough to figure this guy has aces, queens, or ace-queen. You know, it's just hard to imagine him having that. I mean, pocket tens, you know.
It's hard to imagine having that.
No, I mean, just the pocket queens is hard to imagine the way it came down. Ace-queen is hard to imagine the way it came down. So, to me... I think that if he had any of those hands, if he had pocket queens, he probably wouldn't have bet the flop. And he certainly wouldn't have raised. To me, I don't think he would have raised
the
turn.
Bet the flop with the diamonds out there?
With pocket queens and quads? No, I don't think he would have bet. I think he would have checked.
No, on the flop, there's no quads yet.
If you have pocket queens, there's quads.
Not on the flop.
Oh, set. Okay, I'm thinking of... Okay. So, yeah, maybe he would... But I don't think he would have bet 21 if he had pocket queens. That was what I was saying before. It wasn't be enough. And then on the turn, that raise with quads, if he had quads, so I'm ruling out pocket queens here. That's why I'm saying it's hard to imagine him having that. Same with pocket aces for the same reasons. So I'm ruling those two hands out. But an ace queen feels like it's it doesn't feel like that's what he would have bet if he had ace-queen, because he still would have wanted to protect his hand. And then maybe he doesn't raise on the turn because he's got the full house. I mean, it's a tough loss to beat. So,
well, maybe he's not trying to protect his hand. Maybe he's just trying to get value out of it.
Yeah, but
no one's going to flop a flush, and that, you know, hey, I'll take my chances that under diamond's going to come. Doesn't have to be protecting his hand.
No, I know, but you think he would on that flop. And if he didn't, then you think he wouldn't raise with the absolute nuts on the turn. So, I don't know. It just feels like if they're rocks, they like to extract little by little. And that raise, to me, didn't seem like something he would do with the absolute stone-cold nuts. So, that's why it's so tough for me to fold here. But I guess I'll fold. I don't want to fold, though. I feel like a full house here is still good, and he might have king-king or king-queen, you know, with the king of diamonds.
All right, well, our hero says, what to do? I decided I could only beat king of diamonds, queen-x, which is interesting before I reveal what happened. To me, it's interesting if you decided that now. Why did you not decide that on the turn, which is what I was saying.
Yeah, what did the 10 of diamonds have to do with it?
If you decided on the turn, then why would you call the 56 then? Because if you call the 56 then you had to just, it bought you another street to talk yourself into the fact that he had king-queen.
Yeah.
Or that you hit your one out or if you're quads. To me, that doesn't seem solid.
Yeah, no, that's a great point.
And certainly our hand of the week submitter this week is, by his post on the forum, quite solid, so.
Yeah.
All right, so I decided I could only beat King of Diamonds, Queen X, and folded. And the villain showed King of Diamonds, Queen of Clubs.
You bastard. You made me fold my hand and it was good.
Oh, but seriously, though, I mean, now looking back at this, King of Diamonds, I mean, again, I'm just going off of what he told me. I don't see a lot of rocks raising with King and Queen. I just don't see that as a hand that they get excited about. I see beginning players get excited about it, but rocks are more people that have been playing for a long time and just want to play good hands, and they know that king-queen is not a good hand. So I can't see him raising with that, so that's why I dismissed it. On the flop, I can't see him betting into with the ace, although the king of diamonds is there, but normally rocks, like I said, I don't think they count on that backup. But that would, I guess that would explain the $21 bet. He's not excited about his hand. He's just trying to get some money in there. Now I can see the raise on the turn now because he's got his third queen. Now he feels a little more confident. And then he's got the flush backup at that point. That makes sense now.
Well, he's always had the flush backup.
And then on the river, I think he thinks he has the nuts now, which he doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, explains why he bet that way, because he's thinking only one, you know, I mean, he's thinking that, you know, flush-wise, unless you have a full house, oh, I've got the nuts, you know, so, and he probably doesn't put you on the full house, he probably puts you on the same flush draw as him with a jack of diamonds or something, like jack-jack with a jack of diamonds, so, it explains that. The $21 bet's interesting, still. Because he's got the flush draw, so you don't have to worry about being afraid of it. So that kind of makes sense why he bet that way. He wants to see if anybody has an ace out there. Or the $12 bet, whatever it was he bet on the flop. It was 21 on the flop, right? 21. So, yeah, so I don't know. Wow, king, queen. The one hand that we all talked about, and it's the one hand he had.
I'm still patting myself on the back. I think it was a good fold, even though... turned out not to be. Now, he did say the big blind folded, said he folded ace-king on the turn.
The big blind folded ace-king.
Which I can see. I mean, you call the bet, then you hit the ace high, but you, I'm assuming he doesn't have diamonds. Obviously, he couldn't have the diamonds.
Couldn't have diamonds.
So you just you get lucky with the small bet, and then the board pairs, and you're like, all right, now I can represent the queen, and boom, I get raised. Okay. Whew, thanks.
Yeah.
I tried.
Well, that definitely, the lead out was interesting. Yeah. That's an interesting lead out for ace king. I guess I still could have put the initial raiser on ace king, you know, with the king of diamonds. Not that he had that, obviously, he had king queen, but, oh, that's so brutal, you know. But you know what? Sometimes you gotta fold the best hand, that's what they say, and the underboat can cost you a lot of money, you know. It just felt like the way he played it that he didn't have us beat. And it just felt like even on the end, when he bet 185 pounds, which is my goal weight. I just can't believe that he had. Why would he bet? And even so, I know it's a pot-sized bet, but why would he bet so much on the end if he is a rock and wants to extract value? If he has, say, ace queen, you know, or whatever, queen ten, which he wouldn't have raised a preflop, but.
Well, I mean, it's also plausible that he's making that bet in case you do have this pocket sevens.
Yeah, in case. But of course,
it's so expensive that you're like, oh my gosh, I got to call 185 to find out whether he's got the queen or not.
Yeah. Of course, just wondering, too, if he'd convinced we had pocket sevens, would he have thought of that on the street earlier?
Because yeah. Ace-queen wouldn't... I mean, he'd have to think that ace-queen is a little unlikely for us now since we have yes,
right.
One queen, there's two on the board.
Right.
Hmm. All right, well, our hero... went on for a lot of good analysis after this hand. We're not going to spend any more time with it on the show, but hopefully he will post it in the forum. I know he will because he likes the forum now, and we'll have a lot more good discussion on this hand, I'm sure.
Yeah, tough folder.
Well, we appreciate you sending in, and we are going to send you a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store. And remember to send your hands of the week to podcast@annieappmagazine.com.
Want to thank Mark Hoke from Short Stack Radio from joining us today, and hope you're staying warm there in Buffalo. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.